who was deeply involved in the struggle for democratic rights in Syria, meaning free expression for the press, the space for social movements, grassroots progressive movements to operate and to voice critique. Razan had to flee Syria. Many of her friends were detained. Some were disappeared. I think Razan's voice is a very important and legitimate one to hear and to listen to at this time. So I spoke with Razan as she was visiting Damascus for the first time since the overthrow of the government of Bashar al-Assad. So here is our conversation. So Razan, we're speaking now and you are in Damascus. I heard about a lot of efforts that you had been working on actually over many years before the movement for justice in Syria. I mean, that's a big topic, but basically grassroots organizing that was taking place in Syria to address issues like economic injustice and inequality, political repression, political prisoners, over many years. And there was an interesting relationship between a group of progressive activists in Beirut who were trying to support folks in Damascus at the time. I remember this was in the, like, around 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10. I first learned about your work at that time. And then, of course, in the years after that, your work had a global focus because of you know, what was taking place in Syria. And you're back there now. I assume that you weren't able to go there for a long time due to the repression when Bashar al-Assad was still in power. So it's really a pleasure to speak with you from that context. So maybe first, just for people to sort of acquaint themselves with who you are and your work, if you could introduce yourself and share a bit about where you're at right now and any reflections you have of being back there today.
Yeah, thank you, Stefan, for having me. Yeah, so I am a Syrian-Palestinian queer activist, scholar activist. I started blogging in Syria in 2005. My blog used to call Dissentering Damascus, and that the idea was to kind of like not just only focus on Damascus, the capital, which was mostly the focus at the time, but kind of talk about the peripheries in Syria, specifically Jawlan. My nickname at the time was Jawlania. As a Syrian Palestinian, Jawlan was a very important and still important to me. It's essential. We can talk about it later on. When the revolution started in Tunisia and Egypt, myself and other bloggers and activists in Damascus were very eager to join. And we started to organize together, to have a lot of meetings, conversations, which is, of course, the first thing to happen in my adult life. And I was in prison twice, like many other people, and along with my colleagues at the Syrian Center for Freedom of Expression. And I was exiled twice. First from the Assad regime in 2012, and second in 2014 from the Nusra al-Qaeda affiliated group, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, under the command of al-Jawlani, now rebranding himself as Ahmed al-Sharia. I am currently in Damascus. I returned after 12 years in exile, and I was just really, like, it's hard for me to explain. Like, I was so much focused on my feelings of return. My relationship with Damascus is very conflicting, because returning to Damascus and Syria today means that Syria has, like, for me, coming back when a lot of my friends are murdered, it is hard to accept the idea that, you know, returning as if nothing happened. Damascus will never be the same. Syria will never be the same because of the people that we lost over the past 14 years. I'm going to mention Basil Shahade, Uday Tayyem, the Palestinian activist, and also Razan Zaytouna, who's my mentor. who's been kidnapped by Zahran Alloush in Douma. So a lot of these people, a lot of these activists who we need so much today because of their wisdom and their legacy and their vision for Syria. And this is why it has been part of the reason why it's very difficult for me to enter the borders and to cross the borders from Lebanon to here and thinking about, like, I'm returning, but I can return. I'm alive. But others have lost their lives because of this. And this is why I feel like it's been a bittersweet experience for me to be here. And of course, as much has been going on since December 2024 that we can talk about in detail.
Thank you for sharing all that context. I mean, there's really a lot to go into here. I think maybe one thing to highlight is sort of the particular focus on lifting up the grassroots activism and organizing that really played a role in totally reframing the conversation about what was politically possible in Syria. And today, there's sort of like a totally radical repression towards that sort of understanding that a series of social movements and grassroots actors like yourself played a role in totally reshaping what was possible in Syria, and also just the idea that that continues until now, that there's an ongoing movement process, that just because al-Assad is gone from power doesn't mean that these struggles stop. Which might seem obvious, but I think if we pay attention to things in relation to mainstream media news cycles, that would not seem so obvious.
Exactly. I think unfortunately, I want to talk about like several, as you're saying, like there's been some this kind of covering of Syria, like the sentiment that the revolution has won, and that the revolution has met the goal of the regime, the toppling of the regime. And I think that this is dangerous because today, myself and a lot of people that I have met in Damascus and also in Sweida and Al Qunaitra, because I've been to Sweida and I've been to Qunaitra during the past few weeks. And I've spoken to activists who've been part of the 2011 revolution. And a lot of us feel that what I'm going to talk about is suqut. Suqut is a term that people are now congratulating themselves. They're saying, Mabruk for al-suqut. Mabruk for the fall of the regime. Congratulations for the fall of the regime, but they're not saying the word liberation. And I think that's very important, and I think that's but also very political. There are people are saying that Mabruk for liberation or congratulations for the liberation. I think those people are believe that al-Jolani or al-Shara control of Syria is a liberation. And there are people who feel and who view al-Jolani and al-Shara control over Syria is a counter-revolution, is the counter-revolutionary victory, not the revolutionary victory. And I think that's very important to highlight, especially what you're saying about, you know, the revolution continues. And I've heard it, so many events in Syria today are saying that we need a second revolution. So this is like a lot of the people who protested in 2011, this is how they feel. And unfortunately, a lot of that activism is on social media, specifically on Facebook, because Facebook is the Arab-dominated kind of language, whereas and some of it may be on Instagram, but unfortunately in Twitter, which is mostly dominated by diaspora kind of like towards more like Western audience, you see a very different view. And I think that that's why there has been a distraction from how the people or what the people are feeling on the ground. And of course, so going back to this idea of suqut, you know, congratulating for the suqut, as you're saying, like a lot of people are saying that, yes, the Assad has escaped the country. And I've spoken with people who have been supporting, like their families have been supportive of the Assad. And they've been sharing with me that since Assad escaped the country, a lot of his supporters felt betrayed by him, and now they feel alone and left alone. I think this is also an opportunity for us in the revolution to reach out to communities who have been supporters for the Assad, and now they feel betrayed. And I think this is something that we are not talking about enough, unfortunately, because of a lot of the sentiments and what has a lot of the activists has been conceptualizing as a Sunni victimization. Sunni victimization has been prevalent in Syria ever since Ahmed al-Sharaa controlled the country. And it has been really, I think, one of the major obstacles for an inclusive and democratic Syria, that a lot of our friends and martyrs have lost their lives envisioning that kind of Syria and democratic Syria. The reason why we talk about the importance for the revolution to continue, or a lot of the people believe that revolution continues and we need to have that kind of vision that started in 2011 to continue today, especially today, is because of a lot of violations that we have been witnessing, especially against minorities, but also, and I think that a lot of people have been kind of critical of the concept, like the word minorities, and I think that there has been like a different term, like mukawinat, or like confessional communities. But I think that regardless of the terminologies, I think that, you know, the Alawites communities have been targeted. The Druze community have been demonized as pro-Israeli. The Kurdish community have been also been demonized as pro-Israeli and separatist, which has been always been going on the past decade. And I think that the struggle for today is to really to address all of these divisions and all of these discourses of demonization and dehumanization, and accusing a whole community of being pro-Assad and justifying to have a readily kind of justifications for people to be kidnapped, like we've seen with a lot of the Alawites women have been kidnapped. We've seen in the Marsh coastal massacres of 1,500 people have been murdered with their families, including families and kids. So we have a lot of struggles on the ground. And I think that, unfortunately, we are seeing a lot of allies and activists belittling these violations and massacres. And I think that this is where we need to start. And I think there are efforts to organize. I'm very proud of the new generation that I'm seeing and I'm witnessing and I'm meeting. And I'm not talking about the NGOization. I'm not talking about the civil society that has pretty much been, you know, there's a different kind of civil society. You talked about the grassroots level, and I think that still goes on. And that's especially in relation to the wildfires today and the coastal massacres in other areas. I've seen a lot of young women and men and non-binary people have been coordinating to help people. And these people are not backed by any NGO, any funders. This is totally and very much based on donations, people's donations, people collective solidarity. And I think that is beautiful. And this is the kind of work that has started in the revolution 2011. I see it happening again today in the face of these massacres and wildfires that I'm not sure if they're wild, like there are fires in the forest, but a lot of people have been like Ansar al-Sunnah, for example, that have been claiming behind it. And there has been no commentary from the government until today.
Razan, in terms of, like, you've mentioned a whole wide range of different events that have happened in recent months, and I'd really encourage people who are hearing this to look into it. Maybe you could just describe, now that you're back, any sort of moments that communicate, like, on a personal level, this sort of moment for you. Like, you talked about grassroots organizing and younger folks taking political action.
maybe if you could share some moments you've seen or things that have been meaningful since you've been back.
Yeah. I wanted to share something that I think is critical to understand, and I think that would give us an idea about this new government and also the people's collective action and how it's been, this government is being an obstruction to people's grassroots solidarity efforts. So when I was talking to people here, I'm talking about reconnecting with people I've known 12 years ago, and they have not left the country. So me reconnecting with them and entering their home, inviting me to dinner, inviting me to drinks, and kind of like sharing old memories, mutual friends, people we've lost along the way. So, and they've been telling me what they've been experiencing ever since the fall of the regime, ever since the Sukut. And they shared with me a protest that they organized in March, one day after the coastal massacre happened in 8th of March, 2025. People have protested in a square that is very known. It's called Merge Square, and it's very known under the French colonization. The French colonial army used to gather a lot of the anti-colonial revolutionaries and activists and to hang them in that square. So that square has a kind of like a symbolic anti-colonial sentiment and symbolism for a lot of Syrians in Damascus specifically. So that square has a very political significance, and people went there to protest the coastal massacres and to call for the end and to call for the Amn al-Am and general security to protect the people and the civilians and the families in the coast. What happened is that the police have attacked the protest. And I'm not talking about general security, I'm talking the police. And also the people who around the neighborhood have also attacked the protest. So we're talking about new thugs, new Shabiha, who are supporters of the government, who've seen the protest against the coastal massacre as a condemnation of the government. And ever since that protest, which was a solidarity with the Sahel, with the coast, against the massacres. And we all know that the massacre, if you read, for those who are not familiar with, I encourage everyone to read the Reuters report about the coastal massacres, linking the massacres to defense ministry and to factions under the government today who are responsible for these massacres. This is all documented in the Reuters report. And today, by the way, is the deadline for the committee, because the government has organized a committee to investigate the massacres. And today is a deadline for that committee to come out and say, here's our investigation and here's what we found. So we're still waiting to hear from that committee organized by the government, what they're telling us about what they found in the coast about the massacres. So in Damascus, a lot of the activists who are on the ground, they fear now organizing and protesting and being in solidarity with the coast because of that thuggery attack against 9th March of 2025. And I think that's very significant that a lot of people today would just second, kind of like think twice before they go on the ground, before they organize. And I was part of a kind of a women and non-binary led group. We gathered ourselves in social media, and we talked about organizing solidarity for the Alawite women. being kidnapped in the coast. And a lot of the people said, we are scared to go on the ground. We're scared to protest because of that attack on marsh protests. So this is like, I'm telling you a story about something that there's a lot of people who want to protest. And at the same time, there's a fear to protest in the government. And I wanted to say another thing. This had led to a lot of those activists to boycott a lot of the events in Damascus, in Syria, that has been sponsored by the government. What they're feeling is that I'm not going to go to this event sponsored by the government, allowed by the government, by the new government, because if they're going to allow this event to happen, I'm complicit in kind of whitewashing them, kind of make them feel like they're open or democratic, that are allowing some cultural events to happen, not other cultural events to happen, because there's some cultural events that have been sponsored, that have been censored as well. So there's been like really hesitant from 2011 revolutionaries and activists and people that I have really happy to reconnect with after like 12 years of exile, who feel very, do not trust the new government and do not feel they want to be part of the events or public events that are happening. And they're trying to find creative and alternative ways to protest. And I think that they're still figuring it out how, and because it took us some time to figure out how to protest the regime, you know, we had, like, in the Assad regime, we kind of invented this something called Payada protest, which is like a flying protest, that protest that happened like 2 minutes, because, you know, this is like the amount of time that you can protest and then you can run in the alleys. And I think that Syrians of today are trying to find creative and other ways to protest the government so that they keep themselves secure, especially after burned out, because they're burned out. They're like, they lack resources, they lack support, because as I said, like, the Sunni victimization is an obstacle. A lot of people feel like, you know, we've been targeted as Sunnis, as Arabs, and the Alawites are the ones who killed us. And I think that narrative is very dangerous. And I think that narrative needs to be tackled and to organize around. And I think these are some of the issues that I'm trying to share with you about. There is a lot of efforts, but also there's a lot of obstacles.
Razan, thanks for highlighting that. And just for people who are hearing this, you're talking about earlier about this event in March 2025, the coastal massacres. This was largely militia-type groups that have some links to state authorities. That is to be made more clear, I understand, through investigations. I'm sure that the meaningful investigations will happen on a grassroots level, but a lot of civilians lost their lives in these regions in the context of sort of sectarian political framings that you're critiquing, Razan. I feel like it's really important to hear, you know, a lot of the perspectives you're bringing, and also just sort of to break this understanding that politics happens only through monumental events, but actually is a process that happens over time. And in that regard, thinking about the struggles for justice in Syria as ongoing feels really important. And hearing your perspective from the ground is very helpful to help guide our sort of create a bit of a tangible map of some of the issues that are important to consider today. So thanks for the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you so much for these questions, Stefan.
That was a conversation with Razan Ghazawi, who is a Syrian activist and academic. Razan spoke to me from Damascus, Syria. Thank you so much to Razan for being on the program today. This has been another edition of Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph, and we broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m., on CGLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m., on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m., on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m., on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m., on Met Radio 1280 a.m. Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m., on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m., on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m., and on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We are also a podcast. Look us up on your favorite streaming platform. Just search Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will speak to you next week.
You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Uniquely curated programming by our hosts maintains an independent voice among the masses. You keep CJSF independent.